The Secrets of Star Trek is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to The Secrets of Star Trek, where we discuss the hidden layers and deeper meanings found in all the Star Trek TV series, movies, and more. And today we're discussing the Voyager episode, Initiations. I'm Dom Bettinelli, and joining me today on the panel are Jimmy Akin. Hey, Jimmy.
Howdy, Dom.
And Father Corey Stika. Hey, Father Corey.
How's it going?
Folks, be sure to stick around to the end of the episode. We have more of your excellent listener feedback. And I want to encourage you to follow The Secrets of Star Trek in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or watch us on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/StarQuest Media, where you should make sure to hit the bell to get notifications. And another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy is called, I would recommend today, The Secrets of Movies and TV Shows. We have a lot of great episodes coming up, and you can check that out wherever fine podcasts are found, or at sqpn.com/secrets. So today we're discussing Initiations. This is the second episode of the second season of Voyager. And Jimmy, can you give us a recap of what happens in this one?
This week, Commander Chakotay is off in a shuttle doing a ritual commemorating the anniversary of his father's death, but he's attacked by a Kazon boy who wants to earn his Kazon name in a rite of passage. At the moment, the boy is currently named Nog. Chakotay destroys the boy's ship, but saves the boy, dooming him to shame in Kazon culture. The Kazon then capture Chakotay and Nog, and the Kazon leader, Razik, wants to teach other Kazon children a lesson about the price of failure, so he demands that Chakotay kill Nog in front of them. However, Chakotay turns the tables, takes Razik hostage, stuns him, and then he and Nog flee in a shuttle. The Kazon give chase and destroy the shuttle, but Chakotay and Nog beam down to Vasquez Rocks on a moon. Meanwhile, Voyager is tracing Chakotay's path and also makes their way to the moon. Razik is impressed with Federation technology and wants to form an alliance, and he offers to help Janeway and the landing party find Chakotay and get him back. Also, meanwhile, Chakotay and Nog have sort of bonded, and Chakotay realizes that Nog has little future with the Kazon if he can't earn his name. So he offers to let Nog kill him, expecting to be revived by Federation technology in sickbay. However, when everybody meets up, Nog announces that Chakotay isn't his enemy, Razik is, and Nog shoots Razik dead. Afterwards, he claims his Kazon name, and the episode ends with Chakotay performing that ritual again and asking his father's spirit to watch over both him and Nog. The end.
I literally have in my notes, luckily, Chakotay and Carr are able to beam down to Vasquez Rocks to escape.
Yep, yeah.
There's that very recognizable slanted rock that is in every Star Trek shot,
yeah,
of Vasquez Rocks.
In my summary, I initially just said they beam down to Vasquez Rocks, but then I realized I needed to add the moon part to explain yeah. how Voyager was getting there.
For folks who aren't up on it, Vasquez Rocks is a place in Southern California.
Just outside Los Angeles. I've mm-hmm. been there.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's very distinctive rocks where they have filmed outdoor locations for every Star Trek series. Literally, yeah, I think
even
every
up to modern, one. Even up to the newer series like Discovery and things like that.
They've Picard. Yeah, yeah. That's where Rafi had her mobile home trailer. Yep.
And it's really cool to go to Vasquez Rocks and stand there where the Gorn fight happened and climb on the rocks where Finnegan was and everything. And just watch out for the signs that say, beware of rattlesnakes.
Yep. Yes. Watch out for the rattlesnakes, too.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not worried about the signs. We're not worried about what the signs are warning you.
By the way, speaking of recognizable things and other things in my recap, so they hired Aaron Eisenberg to play the Kazon boy in this, and whose actual name is Carr, mm-hmm. like the vehicle. But Aaron Eisenberg is better known for and is so recognizable as Nog from Deep Space Nine that mm-hmm. it's just impossible not to think of him, not to think of Nog constantly throughout this episode. The creators of the show thought that, well, he's going to be under all this latex. He won't be that recognizable. But no, Aaron Eisenberg has an incredibly recognizable voice and vocal mannerisms. It's transparent that this is the guy who plays Nog. Mm-hmm. And they later admitted they kind of made a mistake by casting him. Not that he did a bad job. He's a good actor. No. But it's just they didn't want everyone to constantly be thinking Nog throughout this episode.
How could we possibly think Nog when we're watching about an alien rebellious teenager?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello. Played by the same actor. Anyway, we skipped over our initial or overall impressions. Father Corey, what's your overall impression of this one?
Nog is a Kazon. And Chakotay's an idiot.
We'll get to Chakotay's an idiot.
That's my summary of this episode. Nog is a Kazon and Chakotay is an idiot. So, yeah.
Okay. How about you, Jimmy? Overall?
Well, my summary would be Chakotay's an idiot and Nog is a Kazon.
I like your twist there.
Yeah.
There are definite themes of fatherhood in this one, but they kind of drop the ball at some point, and don't actually close the loop. I mean, it's kind of frustrating because there are massive plot holes. You know, they roll out these threads of themes and don't close them off. And I agree, you know, so it just kind of becomes this story of Nog's a Kazon and Chakotay's an idiot, or whichever version you want to do that.
So thanks for listening to the Secrets of Star Trek.
I say a little bit more. It's not a terrible episode. It's just kind of there.
It's dumb. It's just a dumb episode. It's not a terrible episode. It's just dumb.
apparently was written because they felt like Chakotay didn't get enough to do in the first season. So they needed a Chakotay focused episode.
In fact, they have three Chakotay focused episodes this season to address that. And this is the first.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I have to admit, part of the problem is Kazon are my least favorite Delta Quadrant aliens.
They're even worse than the Vidians.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I wouldn't even put that caveat of Delta Quadrant. They're probably my least favorite aliens in Star Trek. They're just yuck. They're just boring. I don't know. Not interesting.
They're even worse than the Discovery era first season Klingons. You know, they're like Klingon. They're like poor man's Klingons with bad hair days.
Oh, bad hair.
and they're just lame. And this episode, interestingly, I was reading about the behind the scenes stuff, and you know, they became aware of the problem that they had with the Kazon in viewer reception. That viewers were viewing them as these are like Klingons only lame. And so when the writer initially did his draft, and he'd written plots before and he'd written screenplays before, but this is the first time this writer had done both, the plot and the screenplay. And, someone, I think it was Michael Piller, said, okay, we want to make the Kazon and their motivation distinctly different from both the Klingons and the Romulans. We want them to be an outer space street gang or set of different street gangs. That's why we have the different Kazon sects, the Kazon Nistrim and the Kazon Ogla and things like that. They're all basically outer space street gangs. And so I believe it was Piller. He said, what I want you to do is go out. You're in Los Angeles. Go out and meet some Los Angeles gang members or go meet some police who can introduce you to some Los Angeles gang members and learn about gangs from gang members. And the writer interpreted that instruction creatively. And instead of going and meeting actual gang members, he bought an autobiography from a gang that had been written by a gang member and read it. which I have to, it's like, okay, points for creative interpretation of ridiculous instruction.
Yeah.
and he then wrote a document explaining Kazon culture and, you know, envisioning how they work as a culture and so forth. And we actually get a little bit of that in this episode where they talk about how like 26 years ago, the Kazon were subject to some other race that they shared a planet with, and they had everything and we had nothing and we rebelled and went out into the stars.
Right.
And so, okay, I like the world building there. but I haven't read this Kazon culture document. It allegedly influenced the presentation of the Kazon for the rest of the series or the time that they're on it. But I don't know how brilliant this document was, but I'm sorry, Kazon are like Klingons, only lame.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. Now, apparently the director of the episode, Winrick Colby, who directed many, many Star Trek episodes, also disliked this episode. Mm-hmm. He felt the story was lame. He thought, you know, the Chakotay Native American aspect was kind of boring and sort of tacked on. And it should have really focused on him as a Maquis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Chakotay religious thing is always problematic.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it is in this, too. Fortunately, it's a very minor. It's just in two scenes at the beginning and the end.
Right.
But I just – dudes, if you're going to create a Native American, give him a real tribe. And right. And base what you're doing on a real tribe and its beliefs. This is like the equivalent of, oh, we want a white character on this show. Okay, he's a European. Yeah. What kind of European is he? Is he French? Is he Dutch? Is he German? Is he Italian? He's a European, and he has European beliefs and traditions. It's like, what? You know, it's ridiculous.
And as a reminder, we've discussed this before on this podcast, but the Native American traditions that they based Chakotay off of was a fraud.
Yes.
He was a guy who claimed to be this Native American spiritualist. He wasn't Native American, as I recall, or if
he wasn't at all. He was of European Jewish ancestry, and he was a pretendian.
Yeah, he made up all of it. All of it was, and it was like loosely based on sort of maybe kind of. But it was all a fraud. But he was hired by the Voyager crew, to be the Native American visor, and he was just a complete and total fraud.
And it was known that he was a fraud at the time.
So all this Chakotay says, that's all made up.
Yeah. Yeah, and the ritual itself, like, just from a storytelling perspective, so he has to take a shuttlecraft far away from Voyager to do his ritual? Like, how far? Like, what, like... Like, apparently very far.
Light years.
Although the distances in this episode are very fluid. Like, it's at times, and the sensor range of Voyager, like, because in other episodes, Voyager can sense things light years away. Then in this one, sometimes it's like around the corner, down the block, and they can't sense, you know, what's going on. It's just really weird.
Even the Kazon, you know, there's one point where Chakotay tells, you know, the Kazon, well, check your long range sensors and you'll see a ship called Voyager. And yet Voyager supposedly can't see the Kazon ship.
Right, right. And then, you know, his shuttlecraft gets attacked. And so he takes the time to carefully fold things up and stow them away before, like, you know, going to, you know, check the sensors and the shields.
The ritual objects he was using on his quest. Yeah.
So yeah, it was problematic there, and just from a storytelling, but also from the overall Native American aspect. But there's also like this other the Maquis aspect of Chakotay. Like, he keeps insisting that he's peaceful and Federation. You know, I'm a Starfleet officer. We're trained for peace, and we're not warriors. I'm like, you were a Maquis. You were you could either be called a terrorist or freedom fighter, but you were a warrior.
He earned that uniform through lots of tests.
Yeah, if you're going to focus on Chakotay, focus on what makes him an interesting character, which is that he's a Maquis Starfleet officer.
Yeah, he's way too proud of his Starfleet uniform in an unalloyed way. Mm-hmm. I can buy he's wearing the uniform. I can buy he's on the side of Starfleet now, but he's not an uncritical, you know, fan of Starfleet. If he were, he would never have been a Maquis leader.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, right.
And that would have been a more interesting episode if they would have talked about it from the Maquis view, which is much closer to the Kazon view.
Yeah.
Because the Kazons are rebels. They rebelled and all but committed genocide against their slave masters.
Mm-hmm.
And Maquis were rebelling against, you know, the Federation and the Cardassians.
Mm-hmm.
So much closer connection. But no, they had to do it from the Federation side.
it's so paint by numbers Star Trek-y, you know, the mm-hmm. the tropish. You could, if this had been, say, a DS9 episode, you could have really delved into this conflict within Chakotay of understanding a warrior culture, but also understanding, you know,
rebel culture at least.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, and it's a coming of age ritual. That's what Carr is going through. And so this is, I think, where we get the gang thing. Like, he's got to make his mm-hmm. bones by killing somebody, mm-hmm. you know, it's just a sort of a gang thing or a mafia thing, you know.
That's not how you become a made man in the mafia. yeah. You don't have to kill somebody. Not personally having hung out with gang members, I don't know what different gangs do, but murder as the price of admission is not really a good policy for the long-term survival of your gang. And especially failing to murder, you get the death penalty. They're going to kill you if you fail in mm-hmm. your initiation ritual. Wow, is that not good for the long-term survival of your game?
There's no second chances in battle. Well, actually,
there are.
Armies that don't give you second chances in battle do not win wars or various other things.
We kill all of our soldiers who don't manage to kill someone else. Yeah, that's going to decrease your battle strength rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, at least the first time they try, you know, yeah. The theme of fatherhood seems to be important. This is Chakotay speaking to the spirit of his father. Who is Carr's father in this? And that seemed to be a huge lack. Like, if they had made one of these two Kazon adults mm-hmm. Carr's father, that would have, again, increased the drama, the impact of what was going on here. But no, it's like jerk captain and his jerk sidekick. You know, like, that's it.
Even jerkier sidekick.
Right.
Well, and I thought for sure, I don't think I'd seen this episode since it aired, you know, how many ever years ago, but I thought it was going to be that Maj Rajic was going to be his father, the captain.
Yeah. Oh, right. Which
he's the captain, you know, right. But it wasn't. It's like, no, these are, so basically it sounds like the Kazon just, they have kids and then the kids go off and serve on these ships. And
well, that's part of the street gang thing they're going for. Yeah. Typically street gangs are groups of youth that don't all, where their father is not part of the gang.
Right.
And that's what they're going for here. And that's stupid in a spacefaring civilization where you have people running spaceships. You're not going to just, having complete disentanglement from parents is ridiculous.
Right, right.
Well, and as we find out later that the Kazon don't build ships, they don't have the capability for that. They stole all their ships from the original race. But
you
got to
maintain them. Yeah, you got to maintain them, though. Yeah.
Well, and that of course leads to the obvious. Eventually, the Kazon won't have ships.
Right, exactly. I like the fact that when he's in the Chakotay's in this space battle with Carr's little shuttle, he pulls the tricky maneuver of flying a loop in space. Wow, yeah. Didn't expect that one. It was such a tricky maneuver. Where'd he go? Again, they're a spacefaring culture. They'll think in three dimensions.
Yeah, it doesn't work out immediately well for Chakotay. Now, it ultimately works out for him because he's got Federation technology. Mm-hmm. But he does the loop and gets behind Carr's spaceship and then gets on the phone and says, Carr, I'm behind you. I've got a photon torpedo aimed right at your tailpipe. At which point, Carr fires three photon torpedoes at him from the behind of his ship. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, this Nog is thinking three-dimensionally too. He knows you're back there and he's got weapons that can fire behind him.
Well, right.
This was the first part of Chakotay is an idiot where it's like, I really am going to fire at you. No, I really, really mean it. I'm going to fire at you. Don't make me fire at you. Okay, fine. Now I actually fire at you.
Right, right. Well, when he gets the edge of disaster.
Yeah.
So they get captured. They take him aboard. You know, him. He captures Carr, puts him in handcuffs, and then goes looking for the Kazon to give him back. Or the Kazon show up. And he contacts him. Hey, here's your kid back. Like, I'm not sure how that. That's how you think that's going to work out for you. You know, why didn't you go to Voyager? Actually, he was on his way back to Voyager, wasn't he, when they showed up?
Yeah.
But you call Voyager, like, what, you know, I don't know. You've been attacked.
Oh, but his long range communications were knocked out.
Conveniently out.
Oh, right, right, right. The plot required.
Plot damage to the long range communications.
Yes. Yeah, so his plot armor was damaged. Anyway, they take him aboard, and the Kazon put Chakotay and Carr in the trophy room. And then the idea is, let's show the other kids the consequences of failure. Here, Chakotay, you kill Carr, because that's the thing you're going to do.
I liked, at this moment, there was an aspect of the dialogue that I liked, because you can't kill a kid, and that's immoral, and that's what the audience is thinking, that it would be immoral, at least. That's what my segment of the audience is thinking, is it would be immoral to kill Nog at this point. And I'm just going to keep calling him Nog because it's too hard. but that's not going to mean anything to Razik, you know. And so instead of saying, I'm not going to kill him because it would be immoral, Chakotay says, you want me to kill a child in front of other children. What would it accomplish? And that's a more productive line to explore this with, because if he wasn't an idiot, Razik would realize actually killing one of our future warriors in front of other future warriors is not the best gang strategy.
Yeah.
And so it really wouldn't accomplish anything good, ultimately. I mean, yeah, you'd scare them, but you're sowing the seeds of your own destruction.
Right. And the whole exercise results in handing Chakotay a weapon that he uses to escape.
Yeah. Oh, and then back to Chakotay being an idiot. Chakotay takes Razik hostage and gets Nog's help so they can get a shuttle and escape in the shuttle. And off screen, he just stuns Razik and leaves him. Mm-hmm. It's like, dude, you don't know anything about hostage taking. Once you've got the hostage, you keep the hostage until you're safe. And if you leave the enemy commander who you've just humiliated in front of his own crew on his ship, as soon as he recovers from that stun, if not before, they're going to be chasing you down because they want both you and Nog dead.
Well, also, I noticed that Razik is not quite so willing to die in battle when he's got a phaser to his head. You know, that the honor and glory of dying. You know, he's not. He folds like a cheap suit. I mean, he's like, well, is that a
what good would taking him hostage do in leaving with him? Because all they're going to say, well, he wants to die in battle, so blow up the shuttle. Well, with him on it.
I would argue if you're going to escape, it's better to have a hostage than not. I mean, they may not honor the hostage. They may have some ideology of we'll kill them all anyway. But you've got a better chance if you've got their leader hostage.
Right, right. It's better to have them. Then there's this whole conversation he has once they've escaped to the moon with Carr Nog, about his name, you know, earning a name and his uniform. And he talks about how his name is a gift from his tribe and he earned his uniform. And
that's actually a nice thing in he's setting up a conceptual parallel for Nog so he can understand, okay, you have to earn your name. I had to earn my uniform. So we both have to earn things that are important to our identities. And that's actually good from a writing perspective. That's building a cross-cultural connectivity to help Nog understand, okay, we're different. In your culture, it's a name you got to earn. In mine, it's a uniform you got to earn. But we both have had to prove ourselves.
And there's this moment where Carr is telling him, you know, like, why do you hate me? If Chakotay says, Carr is, I have to protect my territory because territory is power. You know, he's kind of quoting back whatever, you know, stuff he's been taught. And Chakotay says, you know, my people taught me a man does not own land. He doesn't own anything but the courage and loyalty in his heart. That's where my power comes from. And I'm like, which people?
Yeah. not only which people, but okay. I'm sorry. Nog is right. Land has value. Mm-hmm. And Native Americans didn't just, they may have, you know, there are tribes that talk about, you know, we don't own this and we, you know, we don't own the land or we, the animals or whatever. Yeah. But they used them and they would fight battles to defend their territory.
Right. Right. It's sort of, you know, it's a patronizing portrayal of Native Americans.
Not all Native Americans were the prairie tribes like we had out here that wandered, you know, all over the land and everything. There's a lot of tribes, especially both on both coasts, that they had permanent settlements. Yeah. They had, you know, their hut, their house.
And because Robert Beltran is Mexican, they eventually settled on, okay, his tribe is like South or Central American.
Yep.
And they had cities.
Yes, they did.
Aztecs, Toltecs, Mayans, they all had cities.
Incans, yep.
Yep.
I do like one. There are a couple of bits. I was actually reading a Native American critique of how Native Americans get handled on Star Trek. This is like in an ethnic journal. And they pointed out a couple of incidents. I won't remember the second one as well, but they pointed out a couple of incidents where even though they're generally not happy with the way Native Americans are treated on Star Trek, and the author of this paper, like some others I've been aware of, was not happy with the casting of a Mexican American as a Native American. I'm going, why?
Yeah,
right. I mean, come on. The Indians that Mexicans, you know, yeah, there's a little bit of Spanish blood in Mexico, but the vast majority of the population is also Native American. Mm-hmm. They're just not Estados Unidos Native Americans, but they're Native Americans. So get over that. But they pointed out a couple of instances where they kind of punctured, even though you got lots of European idealization of Native Americans and so forth going on, they pointed out a couple of places which approvingly where Voyager punctured European stereotypes of Native Americans. One of them is in the pilot, where Tom Paris and Chakotay are in a dangerous situation, and Chakotay is in particular in danger, and Tom Paris is about to rescue him. And he says, after this, you know, you'll like owe me a life debt forever, right? If I save your life. And that's an Indian thing, right? And Chakotay says, wrong tribe. It's like, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. That's, yeah, an aspect where they treated it well. We'll talk a little bit about Neelix. It's funny that this episode was written as Chakotay-centric because he felt underutilized. They felt he was underutilized in season one. Well, Neelix feels underutilized at the beginning of this episode and is talking to Janeway about it. And
he was overutilized in season one.
Yes, he was. Yes,
he certainly was. And it's just, she's so patronizing to him. It's so funny. Like, he's so, you know, weirdly earnest, especially these early seasons. And she's kind of amused by him and by his earnestness. But she assures him, you know, yeah, next time we have tactical simulations, you get to be part of them, I guess.
Well, I like that where, you know, he brings her, looks like a stew or something like that, a bowl of something. And she takes a bite. Your meals are, and you can tell she almost wants to say almost edible, yes, but doesn't quite.
A highlight almost of every day.
Always a highlight of our day. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's clear she doesn't really like his cooking. Yeah.
Yeah. But he does actually get to kind of shine a little bit there when they're talking to the Kazon.
Yeah.
And he starts, oh, this doesn't sound like a Kazon wanting to be friendly and we've got no problems. And even Tom Paris is kind of doing the knock it off. And Neelix just kind of like, I got this.
Yeah, right. So at that point, Janeway has gone down to Vasquez Rocks and with Tuvok and some others, and Tom Paris is in charge on the bridge, which I'm not sure why it's Tom, but it is, and he's talking to the Kazon leader when they show up. He's talking to Razik, and Neelix is sitting there on the bridge, and he intervenes in the conversation and completely cuts through Razik's bluster and competently talks him down and gets what he wants. And all of a sudden, Razik is being cooperative. And I have in my notes, nice to see Neelix being competent instead of whiny and pseudo-comic for once.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That was
a really good scene. I liked what they did with Neelix in that scene.
Well, then they throw the pseudo-comic back in by having him getting really comfortable in the captain's chair, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then on the surface of the planet, the captain meets up with the Kazon there, and the Kazon are surprisingly deferential and helpful to the captain. And is it because of Neelix is frightening him somewhat, or they have a plan?
It was a trap. Yeah. Well, which we see later.
I'm not sure about that.
Because as soon as they get caught in that shield bubble, they're like, oh, your technology doesn't help all that much, does it? Ha, ha, ha.
Well, I think it's a little of both.
I think they're genuinely being helpful here. And I could see how one could read it differently. But I think that at this point, Razik is overawed by Federation technology. And he's talking to Janeway about, like, after this is over, can we talk about forming an alliance and stuff? And I think he's sincere in that. And then he sincerely is trying to help them find Chakotay. I think he's also still planning on killing Nog, but he's trying to make nice with the big bad Federation technology people. And where they're at is this Vasquez Rocks planet is a training ground where they do war games for their, I guess, junior warriors or whatever. Nog says he was there a year ago. And so there are all these booby traps. And at one point, Haliz, the second in command, says, we should go this way. It would be easier. And Tuvok says, oh, but my tricorder indicates this way is better. And Razik kind of shrugs and lets them go their own way. And they start to go the way that Haliz indicated. And the Federation crew goes the way Tuvok indicated. And all of a sudden, they get trapped by a force field, which was a booby trap. And they didn't try to lead him into that. They tried to lead them the correct way, but then they let, okay, well, maybe the Federation with their advanced tech has found a better way. They can go their way if they want. And it's at that point, Razik says, oh, I see your technology doesn't always help you. And so I took that as, you know, they were trying to, you know, take him a decent way. They weren't sure there was a booby trap there. And so they weren't trying to mislead them, but they saw, oh, I guess your technology isn't perfect after all. At least that's how I took it.
Yeah, I guess I took it. Like, yeah, a little bit of like an opportunistic, like, hey, we should go this way and let's see if they detect the problem. You know, mm-hmm. sort of an opportunism there.
Could be.
Yeah. So Chakotay and...
We also, though, should have mentioned, by this point in the story, Chakotay has proved he's an idiot repeatedly at Vasquez Rocks. Like, because Nog is doing nothing but telling him, I'm going to kill you, dude. And why should, because I want to earn my name. And now I've got another chance. And in fact, your tricorder that you've set up to broadcast a homing beacon to your people, I could take your fancy tech back to my people and they'd have to give me a name. So he's repeatedly threatened Chakotay's life. And yet Chakotay walks in front of him while Nog has a weapon behind him. All he's got to do is blast him. And he goes to sleep. Now, he says he didn't get a lot of sleep. Okay, that takes the edge off of it. But, dude, you got some sleep in the presence of a guy who repeatedly threatened your life.
I mean, I suppose it's the, I have confidence in him, you know, that he's changed enough. And, you know, Nog,
you're an idiot.
He does go through this movement where he's, you know, he turns off the tricorder, is going to kill him, and then doesn't. And I don't know, you know, even if Chakotay was pretending to be asleep, I'm not sure what he would have done there because the weapon was pointed at him. All he had to do was pull the trigger.
Yeah, yep. He almost killed you. You are an idiot for getting close to being killed.
Yeah. Now, the ending was pretty good. It was a pretty good twist because we think we're going to get the typical Star Trek selfless sacrifice ending where Chakotay lets Kaur kill him so that it looks like he's dead, and then they're going to revive him and he's going to risk his own life to so that Carr can go back to his people because he couldn't survive it, you know, with the Federation or whatever, with Voyager.
And that's good. You know, Chakotay realizes we've got the magical Federation tax, so he can kill me and they can just bring me back to life in sickbay. Now, he says, my century's technology or my people's technology can resuscitate me after I've been brain dead for 2 minutes. And I'm going, dude, we could do that in 1960.
Yeah,
we can bring you back now if we can avoid a reperfusion injury after 6 hours. Mm. So they should be able to bring you back way more than 2 minutes. But setting that aside, this is a nice thing. I mean, this is genuine self-sacrifice. He does have a technological advantage where they could do this. So this is a perfectly acceptable resolution. And then they don't go that way. And Nog realizes his real enemy is Razik, Mr. No Second Chances in Battle, and kills him, which is like, okay, dude, remember what I said about sowing the seeds of your own destruction? Yeah, you reap what you sow.
Yeah.
And this is why your strategy is a bad one for not just your gang survival, but for your survival. And so that's a nice twist. They give us a plausible solution to the plot, and then they do something different that's also plausible.
Yeah. That was good. I did like that aspect, the unexpected switch. And then he has to convince the second, Hazik or whatever his name is,
Haliz,
this is in your best interest. I've just handed you this Kazon Ogla thing. Any other notes on this one, Father Corey?
Just in case we haven't made it clear, this is Nog becomes a Kazon and Chakotay is an idiot. That's all I got to say.
How about you, Jimmy?
Oh, you know, the only thing I haven't mentioned so far is Chakotay's an idiot and Nog's a Kazon.
Just so we're clear on that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Let's talk about some of our listener feedback that we've gotten. And both of these come from episodes that are a bit in the past as we're recording now. The first comes from our episode where we discussed the Next Generation episode Haven. That's the one where Deanna has her fiance Wyatt, who shows up and then
with the talking quark box.
Armin Zimmerman. And there's a scene in that, to set the scene for the comment, the feedback, there's a scene in that where Deanna has a temper tantrum during dinner at her mom.
And they're all getting drunk.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we noted in our discussion that Tasha Yar smirked when Deanna hit the roof. So this comment comes from Edith on our YouTube channel, and she says, Tasha smirked because nobody is used to Deanna blowing her stack, which, that's probably why.
That's... And that'd probably get a lot of people smirking to see that, especially since she's doing that at her mom.
And she's a counselor. It's like, okay, counselor has family issues too. Okay.
Exactly. Seeing the therapist lose her cool. And then she adds, I have a crazy theory that the planet that they were going to might have been partially sentient and pulled Ariana and Wyatt together.
Because they'd been communicating telepathically for years, apparently, without realizing that they were doing so.
Yeah, through dreams.
Yes. And we never got an explanation for why, but that's not a bad one. And then from Mike, who sent in an email, he says, I'm late to the Secrets of Star Trek party, but now I'm binging my way through your back catalog. In episode 143, discussing Voyager's Scorpion Part 1, Jimmy commented that the creators and producers of Voyager missed an opportunity in not emulating Homer's Odyssey. I agree completely. I watched every single episode of Voyager during its original run, but I never liked the title Voyager. It was both too generic a title, and at the same time, my brother and I jokingly called it Star Trek V'ger.
You're not the only one.
In the early 2000s, just to amuse myself, I wrote up a bunch of notes for an alternate, improved version of Voyager called Star Trek Odyssey, about the USS Odyssey, lost in the Delta Quadrant. Or if there was nervousness around the word Odyssey due to 2001, A Space Odyssey, Star Trek Ulysses. It's so obvious. They're stranded far from home, and the series is about the long voyage home. 10 years in Homer's Odyssey, 7 years of the Voyager's Odyssey. It's not an outbound voyage of exploration like the original Star Trek and Next Generation, and then later Enterprise, but a homebound voyage. Voyager was always the Odyssey, and it was nice to hear Jimmy say so.
It is. It would be curious to see how many elements they could have lifted, you know, because you don't want to make it too close. But I could imagine a race of extra tall, one-eyed cyclopses that they meet.
Mm-hmm.
I could imagine a planet of lotus eaters that they go to. And it would be
the
very
sirens
interesting.
And things like that. Yeah.
The sirens, Scylla and Charybdis. It would be very interesting. I guess that's Jason the Argonauts. It would be interesting if Janeway gets home and finds her husband has all these suitors.
Mark!
Yeah.
Interesting. So that's our feedback. Thank you, everyone, for your feedback. We love getting it. And now we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create The Secrets of Star Trek, including Paul B., Eric, Brian B., Michael T., and William N. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue The Secrets of Star Trek and all the shows at StarQuest. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And we'd also like to thank Victor Lambs, who edited this episode. So that's it from us. What did you think of Voyager's initiations? Was Chakotay stupid and Naga Kazon? Let us know by commenting on the show at sqpn.com/trek, our Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to trek@sqpn.com, or visit our Discord community at sqpn.com/Discord. And you can watch The Secrets of Star Trek on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/StarQuestMedia and leave a comment there. We'll be back next time when we'll be discussing the Enterprise episode, Fallen Hero. Until then, Father Corey Stika, thank you for joining me in sharing The Secrets of Star Trek.
Thank you, Dom.
Jimmy Akin, thank you as well.
Thank you, Akuchi Maya, and live long and prosper.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Star Trek on StarQuest, and remember, your meals are getting to be almost certainly a highlight of every day.